Gospel of Luke, chapter 21. I'll just kind of ignore that one because I didn't write the right passage up there. Luke chapter 21. And then we'll be prepared just to look a couple of verses back. It shouldn't be very far in your Bibles. If you're using a cell phone, you ought to be able to just hit a back arrow. But we're going to look at Luke chapter 21, verses 1 through 4 this morning. We began looking through small things a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about, or at least I talked to you about, the butterfly effect. And remember, just a little bitty butterfly flapping his wings, we're told, can either make a storm or break a storm here in our country. I don't know who's flapping or not flapping, but whichever one it is, he's doing a good job, right? Keeping those storms away, that's a good thing. Of course, I say that in jest because I know that the Lord is the one who is in charge of our globe and that everything falls at His command. And so having said that, we should trust Him. But that story that was about that was God remembered Lot due to Abraham's prayers. Lot didn't see Abraham praying. Lot probably didn't even know Abraham was praying. But the thing that was done there, Abraham prayed, God saved Lot, which also ended to the saving of Ai, a little town, all because Abraham prayed. Don't underestimate little things. Then last week, I failed miserably with this one because so few of you actually remembered the toilet paper commercial because little things mean a lot. That has been glued in my head. I have never forgotten that little jingle. So we could almost skip that one, but let's just make sure we remember. We talked about Zacchaeus. He was a man of a little stature, but before the story was over, he was a man of great faith. His outward height had nothing to do with anything within him. Today, we're going to see if y'all can remember this one. A little dab will do you. Okay, I think I'm a little on safer ground here. Some of y'all shaking your head, yes. By the way, guys, if you didn't know this, according to Dick Clark, this will have the gals running after you if you use Brill Cream. It's amazing the different kind of things they use to try to sell their products. So a quick scan of the crowd. How many of you ladies in here, it was the Brill Cream that did it for you? If your husband or your boyfriend didn't have Brill Cream, you would have never noticed him. Raise your hand. Okay. So what we've learned from Hollywood and the media, they often lie. Don't believe them, but again, little things. And if you've ever used Brill Cream, you know you don't want to use half the tube. A little bit of it does go throughout the entire range of hair if you've got hair to put it in. And so it's very effective in what it does. Again, little things can make such a big difference. So go with me here in your minds. How often do we underestimate the small things? AAA batteries and the remote control for the TV. You don't think about them till when? Till you're sitting up there standing by the side of the TV trying to find that button that changes the channel that they've tucked away somewhere you've never had to use it because you can't find your AAA batteries in your house. How about the bite of a single mosquito or flea? It's amazing what one little bite can do. One of my favorites, the incremental change in the sunrise-sunset position every single day. It's constantly moving back and forth. The moon does it in a month. The sun, over the course of each season, is constantly moving. So whereas in June 21st, the shadows come across in the morning, the angle of the church, right now they're coming almost square down. We were driving into town this week, and the sun was just like, poof! In the evening, I looked at her and said, you know why that is, huh? Because I was hoping she had been paying attention while I'm preaching, or at least some of the science classes we've had at VBS. And she said, it's got something to do with, what do you call those things? The equinox. I was all excited. I said, what's the equinox? And she didn't know much more than that. And I told her, I said, I failed. I have failed. My own family doesn't understand the movement of the sun and the moon. But some of you know what I'm talking about. When you're driving down 378, right now, first thing in the morning, that sunlight is just like squaring your eyeballs. If you're coming home from work in the evening and it's setting, it's squaring your face. But it only does that on the fall and spring equinoxes. In the winter, it's going to be hard off to your left if you're for sunset. And if you're driving up, it's going to be hard off on your right. And that's just the way things are working out because God has designed that. But each day it moves just a little bit. And that little bit adds up over time and it makes a big difference. How about we tend to gravitate, though, towards the big things. We like the showy things. We like the attention-getting things, and I doubt there's many of you who would be content to go out every day with a compass and measure just that small incremental change. You're going to say, Brother Luke, I need something I can measure and see a big difference. I need something that's a lot easier to follow. Consider then with me how a pine tree seed can become a tall, stately pine. That little bitty. I mean, they're as small as sunflower seeds. I'm talking about the actual kernel. Tiny little thing. An acorn can grow into a stately oak. A single drop of rain compared to a flood. Take away all the little drops and what do you not have? You don't have a rainstorm. A single kernel of corn planted in your garden can produce 2 ears per stalk, and then you will have hundreds of kernels just from those 2 ears, from a very tiny beginning. Negatively, in our society today, the amount of fentanyl that it will take to send you into some kind of crazed mental thing, you can't even hardly see it. It's such a tiny amount. That's why cops have to be careful now, arresting people, checking pockets, because just a little bit can do all kinds of strange things to you. What's 15 minutes compared to 1,440 during your day? There's 1,440 minutes per day. What's 15 minutes compared to that? Let me help you figure that out. What's 15 cents compared to $14.40? If you had $14.40, you gave me 15 cents. Are you going to think about it? Not really. 15 cents is kind of what? It's kind of tiny. It's kind of small. It's kind of insignificant. In fact, also do a quick scan. How many of you would bend over in the Walmart parking lot to pick up the nickels and the pennies? That might add up to 50. Yeah, there's a couple of us. That's why we keep the parking lots clean, right? Keeping the money off of it. I'll bend over to pick up a nickel. I'll bend over to pick up a penny. And I don't care if it's on heads or tails. If it's a penny, I can use it. Because little pennies do what? They add up over time. Hiking in the Rockies. Now, this is kind of hard to see because I didn't have a good picture. And taking micro pictures of little flowers in the alpine tundra environment, that little red thing is a 1.5-inch Fitbit watch. That gives you the concept that the flowers next to it are teeny tiny. Those little flowers make up that landscape. Would we even notice if we removed the little flowers? Well, of course we would, because the ground wouldn't have its cover then. The little pikas, they're actually a member of the rabbit family. They look like a rat or a mouse. They dwell in there. They eat this stuff. They eat the mosses. They eat these lichens, little stuff growing on rocks. But these little flowers, they're teeny tiny. And they were all created by God. And they have a glory and a splendor all of their own. But how easy it is to lose sight of the flowers in the midst of the grand things. A lot of you like football, and a lot of you think the quarterback's the most important person on the team. Without a good offensive line, I don't care how good your quarterback is, if he can't run, he's in trouble. Probably in trouble anyway. It takes a lot of people. What happens if you lose a good center? You get bad snaps. Your quarterback is going to look what? Rotten. And by the way, here's one of those counterintuitive things. You never notice the center until what? A snap goes wrong. Then everything in the whole thing, man, if he would have handed that ball better, what? I mean, it's amazing what small things can do. This morning we're going to continue in that thought about the small things and the great impact they can make from Luke chapter 21. But we need to back up two verses simply into chapter 20, beginning with verse 46. This is paramount to the passage we're looking at. In verse 46, Jesus had just spoken, "Beware of the scribes." The scribes are the teachers, writers of that time. They were responsible for helping people to understand the law of God. They were responsible for helping perpetuate it for other generations. "Beware of the scribes, which desire to walk in long robes and love greetings in the market and the highest seats in the synagogues and the chief rooms at feasts." So he tells you what kind of scribes to be aware of. The ones that make it all about themselves rather than the task at hand. Now, I know none of y'all know anybody like that. It doesn't matter if it's your birthday, Christmas, or whatever. When your family gets together, none of them make it all about them at all. Everybody's families are nice. Everybody gets along. You leave all your family meetings and you're thinking, well, that was sweet. I don't know what little unicorn land you're living in, but that's usually not what we hear. Man, can you believe they just talked about themselves the whole time? Talk about what they did. Yeah. Think of that as the way the scribes, they wanted to be noticed. They wore long robes. Can you imagine somebody walking around in a long robe saying, "I'm just trying to blend in. I'm not trying to be noticed." That's when our society went through the goth generation. They dressed in black so that they would blend in. I'm thinking, wait, have y'all ever seen a picture? Color, 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 black. Who do you notice? The one wearing all black, the white pale makeup that just sticks out like a sore thumb. No, you're not really trying to blend in. You're screaming for attention. You just don't want us to know you're screaming for attention. They wore long robes to draw people's attentions to themselves. They loved greetings, and this wasn't just simply shaking a hand, but this was an elaborate, a lesser to a greater, and you spoke it really loud, and I hate to say this, but sometimes there are preaching buddies or two, and when you walk up, it's like you never want to be in public. "Well, hello there, Right Reverend Luke, you know, Bishop of the..." I'm thinking like, shh, I do not wear a collar. I do not wear a shirt with the name of Westside on it. I don't have one that says Jesus follower, none of that, because I see myself like a submarine. I don't want everybody to know I'm a preacher right off the bat. I'm a human being. And the conversations go completely different than when they think I'm a pastor. But some of them like these big, loud, fancy greetings. That's what was happening here. They loved the highest seats in the synagogue. They wanted the chief chairs. They wanted the chief rooms at feasts. They wanted to sit at the head of the table. Some of y'all would be just happy to get away from the kids' table, huh? Well, they're not looking to get away from the kids' table. They want to be right next to the host as a position of preeminence. Now, all of that we could go along with, and we could look at them and look down the corner of our nose at them and dismiss it. But this is only a symptom of something greater underlying. In verse 47, Jesus said they devour widows' homes. They defraud the widows. They take advantage of those they were supposed to be protecting. You see that? They devour or they defraud. I'm not sure what any of your different translations would have there. Anything you've got there means they're taking advantage of them. The widows are supposed to be watched out for. And in God's economy, there are two groups of people that he considers the most helpless and to be the most protected, the widows and the orphans. And yet in their society, that was the two most likely to be taken advantage of. And even in our society, they are used as cover for much. But this is the religious leaders. These are those that are supposed to be teaching the word of God. And what are they doing? They are going in and devouring widows' houses, taking advantage of them. And then, as if covering up their shame, they make long prayers simply to be seen by people. Their prayer is not really genuine conversation with God. They just think everybody will be impressed if they pray a long time. Well, I'll give you a clue. If you want to pray a very long time, just use the word very a lot. Same thing you tried to do in school. You know, you had to write a 150-word essay. You use very a couple of dozen times throughout there, and you hope Calvin doesn't catch it when he's grading your paper. You're home free, right? Well, they thought, if I pray like this, they're not concerned about what God, the people, will think. I'm a good man of God. Everything about them was themselves. As if a long prayer could cover unclean hands. As if long, ostentatious prayers could cover a dirty heart. Piety to cover wrongdoing. And by the way, don't you question ministers. We're the Lord's anointed. Piety covering wrongdoing. And yet there was an audience for it. You understand this. If there's no audience for it, nobody will put on the show. There's an audience for it. The number of singers today that really can't sing, by the time their music makes it to the airwaves, or used to be on a CD or a record player or a cassette tape, now it's MP3 or somewhere out there in the ethereal. You take away all the electronic add-ons and subtractions, and you find out the person you think is all that great really can't carry a tune with a handle on it. But what do the people follow? The show. They like the show. I wonder if for a year, all that happened at concerts, secular, Christian, whatever, take away the fanfare. Just put people in front of a microphones. If you play a musical instrument, you got to still play your musical instrument. Cut out all of the digitizing. Cut out all of the voices. And by the way, there are all kind of things you plug in so that your voice doesn't sound a little flat, doesn't get too sharp. Remove all of that, and they just sing with their real voice how big their crowds would be when the year was over. Remove the pyrotechnics, the fog, because we know the fog really makes them sing better. Makes preachers preach better. Doesn't it? Must. A lot of people think that's what church service is. There ain't holy glitter falling from the air vents. Do you really think I would share with y'all if gold started falling from the air vents anyway? Man, we'd be fighting over who got to clean the church, wouldn't we? Well, but I'm challenging even beyond the mundane. I'm contending there are a lot of things that aren't mundane. We've made them mundane. They're not mundane in God's eyes, is my point. And even the little bitty flowers. Sometimes you got to slow down. We were, one trip we were in the Rockies. By the way, that was my picture. The other one I had to hide from somebody else because all of my other pictures are somewhere on another computer that's probably dead. We were taking pictures walking along this one trail, and I imagine we must have stopped every 3 minutes. And we passed up a guy who was catching butterflies, some kind of professor, and then he would pass us up, and we'd pass him up. He said, "You know what we're doing, no, don't you?" I said, "No, I have no clue." He said, "It's called the naturalist shuffle. We do a whole lot of moving, and we never get anywhere fast." And that's because you're stopping and taking times to appreciate everything. Some of you have learned this reading through your Bible. I challenge you, when you start reading your Bible through the year, do not stop and study. Because the moment you begin to stop and study from your reading through in a year, you're going to find out, I can't read my whole Bible through in a year. Right? There's absolutely nothing wrong with having a Bible reading time where maybe keep you a little notebook there. I need to come back later for this. I need to come back later for this. But just plowing through and reading, because you're going to begin to see things from a different frame of reference, a bigger picture, a clearer lens than when we start getting into the tiny minutiae. And if you stop every 5 minutes to do a 15 to 20 minute study, you're not going to finish your Bible in a year unless that's all you do all day long. The little things in that picture, somewhere in there, if you were hiking with me there, I've got to say, you know what? There's a pika in there somewhere. And you know how you're going to find the pika? You're going to sit on a rock and you're going to get still, because you'll never see them move if you're moving, because they're so small and they don't bounce around out like, you know, an elk stands up and you can see him for a couple of hundred yards. Pika, you can't even see him when he's this close to you because he blends in unless you get still. Wonder what other things are hiding under there if we took the time to see the grand picture covering the small things. And with some people, the piety, which is covering their wrongdoing. Some of the greatest singers, we find out later, harboring great sins. Do you burn your CDs? Do you crash them? Do you throw them away? What do? You never saw it coming. Piety as an excuse. So I decided one thing I'm going to challenge some of you to do. Some of, I don't know if any of you take it. Go back and find the presidential debate. Turn the sound down and just watch the facial expressions. Don't listen to what's being said. Watch the countenance of people and see what you can learn. Genuine versus performance. That's the scribes. They are performers. Now, when we move into chapter 21, it's a chapter break, but there is not a break in the sequence. Notice in verse 1, Jesus looked up. So he's sitting there telling the people all about these scribes, and then he looks up in the synagogue and he sees the rich men casting their gifts into the treasury. And verse 2 says, he also saw a certain poor widow casting in there 2 mites. Jesus is watching. We have no problem warning our kids about Santa Claus. He's watching you. He's making a list and he's checking it twice. Let me tell you about the one you're going to all stand before at the end of eternity. And that's going to be Jesus, who's going to open the books. He's watching and he is keeping a record of all that we do. These people, I didn't hear that. Or don't do. Very good. People were bringing their gifts. They're casting them into the treasury. And what you need to know about that word gifts there, this is not a mandated sacrifice. This is a free will offering. It's not compelled. And so if you wanted to give a gift, it doesn't take care of what you're compelled to give. This is something that you would just freely give of your own. And there are lots of rich people in here, Jesus notices, that are giving their uncompelled gifts into the treasury. They're giving much. And Mark chapter 12 is a passage that's parallel. Mark says that they were giving much. And then in verse 2, he saw a certain poor widow casting in there 2 mites. Now, 2 mites are the 2 smallest coins they would have had. And if you cross-reference some of yours, you're going to find out that it's 1/7 of the brass coin. And you're thinking, well, that don't make a difference to me at all. Think in terms of taking just like a regular penny and cutting it up into 7 pieces. 1/7 would be a mite. She was casting in 2 mites. Very small amount is the idea here. It's not that she didn't have money. What she had was very tiny amount. And Jesus is not focusing on the size of the gifts, by the way. Even though he tells you what they gave, the size of the gifts is not the point of what he's pointing out. But that's how we measure things, isn't it? Big versus little. And in the area of gifts, our judgment extends to the size of the impact of such gifts. Somebody gives you $1 for your birthday, it's not even going to make you raise an eyebrow in this economy. Right? Can you remember days of yore. Can I just, who do I ask? An older person? Let's see. I'm not going to look at you. Miss Rena, when you graduated from school, if somebody put money in an envelope and gave it to you for graduation, what would you have considered a generous gift? I'm thinking like $10 or... Yeah. Nowadays, you don't put a $100 bill in. What's the point of opening it up, right? Well, I mean, we look at the size of the gift and the impact. What's a dollar going to do for a college education? It ain't going to get your foot in the door. What's $100 going to do? Maybe get your application processed, right? Oh, just a card. She's saying that kids, how would you feel if you just got a card that said, "Happy graduation"? No gift card, no money. And we're, by the way, we're going to get around to, it's the thought that counts. We'll deal with that one later. We judge size of gifts based upon their impact, which means a big gift has what? We think big impact. We think a little gift has minimal impact. That's how we tend to think. It's highly unlikely the two mites would have been noticed had they not been given. In other words, the people counting the treasury, if she hadn't put in those two mites, would they have even noticed they were missing? No. But if the rich had stopped giving, it would be noticed what? Almost immediately. A new budget would have to be drawn up, right? And this is how we judge the act of giving. This will get attention. Or if no one will notice, then I'm not going to give. I'm going to say that one again. If nobody will notice, I'm not going to give. Calvin won't be able to tell that I'm not singing. If the whole church adopted that idea, he'd be singing a solo every song. Some of you underestimate what's going on in a song service. It's not you trying to impress your neighbor. It's not even you trying to impress God. It's you trying to honor God or speaking to yourselves in psalms, hymns, and songs, trying to encourage a neighbor, but impress, far from it. Jesus not only notices what is happening in this giving, he knows the comparison of the gift giving to what actually could be afforded. When he looks into this picture, the knowledge that has come to him, he knows what could have been. It's not the size of the gift compared to somebody else's to what's on stake here. We like to compare ourselves to others. In fact, national averages are what drive a lot of polls. When you go to the doctor, you can go to your doctor, weigh 205 pounds, be 5'9" tall, and get a BMI of 30, and your actual fat content in your body be about 22%. Because what are they doing? Comparing you to everybody else. And one of the things that I learn on my medical journey through life is what may be normal for me may not be normal for other people. Because there's variations. You ever notice that one person, they're this big, they can eat 15 pounds of food at a meal and they never get any bigger. And you're like, what's going on there? And then you've got other people, they wish they were this big, and we're not going to stretch out our arms, but if they even eat just a little bitty plate full, I mean, it's like the weight just jumps on them. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody's body is different. Now, there are things we can compare. You know, we got two eyes, a nose, two ears, and if you don't have that, then you kind of fall short in that department. And even though it looks like I've got ears, one of them barely even knows what it means to work. Take out the hearing aids, my voice raises up because I got to hear myself talk. Little things make a big difference. Jesus isn't comparing what she gave to what the rich people gave. He's getting into the heart of what it means to really give. It's not the size of your gift compared to the size of others' gifts. It's going to be the size of your gift compared to the size of your own treasury. What you can afford to give. So as we progress through this, if anything, if you're in competition against anybody, it's yourself. Everybody else fades from view. It's you and the Lord. Now notice carefully in verse 3, Jesus says, "Of a truth, I say unto you, that this poor widow has cast in more than they all." That widow word there is important because what did we see at the end of the previous chapter? The scribes had been taking advantage of the widows, which means they're going to have minimal because they've been defrauded by those that should have been taking care of them. See the connection? They're in their condition because they're not being watched out for, but he says that this widow, she has cast in greatly, more than all of them together. What do you think the looks of the people when she came walking by might have been? We can only imagine because sometimes we look at people like that. When I was up in Northeast Louisiana, a lady and her sister were going to sing, and I can remember the music man warning me about their voice quality. He wasn't lying. But I can also tell you this, the heart that went into what they sang outmatched some of the lovely voices that at other times people sang with. We're not used to listening to people that are a half a step off in their singing quality. That's why we have all the electronic gadgets now, because those people that can't sing, they fix it to where it sounds good, and then they make a gazillion dollars off of them, and they couldn't carry a tune if they had to. But we want somebody who stands up to sing to have voice control. We want them to be on pitch. We want them to be able to sing really high or really low. Again, because of the comparisons. For some of you, how did you react when you found out Ray Bolts had been living a double life? One of them that has been swept under the rug, Chris Rice, and I have scoured the internet very hard for this. Somebody paid a really good PR firm to eliminate this off the internet. He was charged with, not followed through, because you can't find anything with, taking advantage of some girls in his youth group. And for those of you who are listening to music now, you're thinking, wait a minute, he did kind of fall off the radar, did he not? Chris Rice was putting out music left and right. I mean, just excellent songs. And then where did he go? Maybe everything on the outside was made to cover up what was happening under the darkness. The same with Ray Bolts. We get caught up in the flashy. We get caught up in those that impress our ears. We get caught up in those that impress our eyes. And Jesus is about to explain why we shouldn't do that. In verse 4, he tells us why. All of these have cast out of their abundance unto the offerings of God. But she of her, and I'm going to use the King James word here, even though we don't use it, of her penury has cast in all the living that she had. And the reason why I want to use that word before I even change it, because sometimes when we learn a new word, it forces us to remember what's going on here. We don't talk about people being penurious. It used to be a legitimate word. We say they're poor. They're down and out, whatever word you want to use. So this lady who was lacking in her destitution, in her scant supply, don't think she's completely broke. Now, after she gives to the Lord, she's completely broke. But she doesn't give out of a great abundance. She gives what she has. That's what they mean by penury there. She was living, but she wasn't living high. And she gives out of her scant supply. They gave based upon what they could afford. She gave based upon what she could not afford, according to modern accounting tactics. But Jesus says the size of her gift compared to the ability is what caught heaven's attention. See, it's not how you are compared to others. That's why people are afraid to sing for churches. Yeah, but my voice isn't as good as so-and-so's. Is your heart right with God? That should be the main thing. Is your heart right with God? And my point a while ago was, lots of people that sound really lovely's heart isn't right with God, and we're falling for that when we should be asking the questions, are they right with God? From the pastors we follow, the teachers we follow, the musicians we listen to, are they right with God? Don't inundate me this week, but very seldom does anybody ever come up and say, Pastor, are you right with God? How you doing? Now, if you mean to imply how you doing, are you right with God, you got to understand, I'm a guy, and I don't like dancing around the bush, and I don't like blowing smoke. Ask me the question you want to ask me. Right? She's not paying attention to me at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't paying attention. I don't want to have to figure out what you mean. I don't want to have to figure out if you've got a secret agenda. I'd rather you just be honest with me, put your words out on the table, and then I ain't got to think hard about it. I can say, hey, I can answer that question. None of your business. No, but my point being, when I don't have to figure it out, when you're honest, then I can answer honest questions. It is our business. You should have great expectations of those you look up to, those you follow, those you trust to lead you. Politicians, pastors, notwithstanding. It's important what's going on in the heart. And Jesus basically is teaching almost here a kind of a ratio, if you will. The rich gave more, but it hardly affected their living because they were so wealthy. The poor widow gave less, but it was all she had. Which one you think is going to notice the difference? It's not a lateral comparison. And by the way, shortcut those who have abused this passage. This passage is not an argument for socialism or communism. Because at the end of the day, socialism and communism is lateral comparison. How are you compared to your neighbor? That's not what Jesus is teaching. Jesus is teaching, how is your heart with God? How is your heart with God? And it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. That's beside the point. How is your heart with God? Not compared to men, compared to what God is looking for in men. So if you're thinking, how much can I give just to get by? Heart problem. The question isn't even how much can I afford to give? It's really, how can I afford not to give? The early church had expectations that all would labor. And if you don't labor, you didn't get to eat of the church's benefit. Somebody calls up to the church and they want some help from us. And hopefully you're all on board with this. If they can work and won't work, I won't help. I won't help. I'll take you to put a job application in. I'll make sure we can find you a way to get to a job. But if you don't want to work, you ain't sponging off of us. And there are jobs available. Now, they're not all glamorous. But listen, a little bit can put some food on your table and you can get through a hump. I mean, again, it's not going to be glamorous. And by the way, there are people here that have been through these paths where you have to do with little to be able to get further down the road. The early church did not look at those who were able to labor. In fact, according to the law, the widows, if they were healthily able to, they were supposed to go out in the fields and glean. In other words, there was a supermarket. You got to go to the supermarket to get it. And if you read the story of Ruth, that's what she did. Apparently, Naomi wasn't much for walking after that, so Ruth went out to glean for herself and her mother-in-law, which is what the biblical concept of family was supposed to do. You did not better yourselves at the expense of others. That's not what biblical giving is about at all. Biblical giving is about this single truth: where your treasure is, there will your heart be. What you treasure is where your heart is. We've heard people, after a great storm, a great tornado, looking at everything before them that was home. We can replace all this. We have our life. They're not concerned about the family photos they lost because those were temporary anyway. They were looked at life as simply, these are things that we had. Now they're gone. Okay. That's tough, right? Especially when you treasured what you had rather than the one who gives you the treasures. Where was the poor widow's heart? In the hand of God. Where was the heart of the rich people? Their gifts and the accolades of the people. In the early church, this was a problem. James chapter 2, 1 through 7. Too many verses to put up in one little single frame here in James chapter 2. Verses 1 through 7, James writes, "My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. For if there come unto you assembly a man with a gold ring and goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and you have respect to him that wears the gay clothing, and say unto him, sit thou here in a good place, and say to the poor, stand thou there, or sit here under my footstool, are you not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Hearken, my beloved brethren, has not God chosen the poor of this world rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he has promised to them that love him? But you have despised the poor." Then he asked this question, "Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme the worthy name by which you are called?" Could rip it out of the headlines from today. We say it this way: the rich get richer and the poor get... Not in the church. You're supposed to remember this. Every way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord ponders the heart. Some of your Bibles, if you look it up, it's going to say ways. I like ponders. Because if I take you all the way back to that picture from the Rockies, what is really fun sometimes is just to glance out at the landscape and just ponder. What would it be like to live up here? In the winter, it'd be really cold. In the summer, it's not really warm at all. So if you like to really swim in the lakes and stuff, you're not going to find much swimming comfortable up there. In fact, in June, some of the lakes are still thawing out. By the time they thaw out, August comes around, then first little snowfalls are going to sneak up on you in September. Ponder these things. I want to know what it was like when the settlers passed through. And if you go up Pikes Peak, you can see some of the old roads where they actually rode wagons. And what we find out is that in the tundra, it takes forever for the ground to repair itself. So you can still see old wagon tracks. Wonder what they thought when they drove through there. They didn't hear the sound of that cog railway train grunting as it climbed up the steep grade. They just had their horses, maybe a pfft, and the little squeak of the wagon wheel, maybe. That's all they had. When they drove through there at night, there was no light pollution. Stars forever. Ponder to think about. Do you even stop and think about things anymore? Are we in such a fast, high-paced society that we don't have time to stop and think? Do I stop and think before I put money in the offering plate and just pause? God, I'm grateful I can give, or God, you have given so much to me. However you want to think about it in that respect, but God, you've been good to me. The fact that you can give means you've been given to. Yeah, but I earned this, Brother Luke. Who gave you the health to go out and put your hand to the plow and make what you made? You ever ponder things? And I'm not knocking on wood, but it would be nice if meteorologists pondered God in their calculations. People were worried and freaking out. In May, June, and July, that we're going to have 17 to 24 named storms. 4 to 7 of them are going to be wickedly bad storms because we got hot ocean temperatures. We've got La Nina coming in, and it ain't going to shear any storm off. And then when you go look at this Category 2, supposedly, that smacked on shore, and you find out the actual measurements on land were not anywhere near 100 miles an hour. They were struggling to get to 70. Flight level was 90. You know where flight level's at? 2,500 feet. You don't live there. You live at ground level. Now, most measurements for hurricanes legitimately are taking at 33 feet. So if you go by you one of those little storm centers and you want to put your little wind gauge out, you need to get it up 33 feet to get what they would consider measurable winds. Somebody's padding the numbers somewhere for some reason. And I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out if you stop and ponder for a moment. Not every bit of those taxes that you pay go to feed the immigrants. Some of it goes to feed these guys trying to figure out why the globe is warming and why the climate's changing, and every excuse we can come up with that excludes God. And God's weighing the heart every moment. You see, God is pondering. God is thinking about those things. Is the person I'm dealing with, are they going to take advantage of me? Why do I got to sign my name 62,000 times to be able to get this from them? What's up here? Does anybody no longer ponder those things? Well, if they have you sign your name 62,000 times, I can tell you what, there's somebody on their side that has pondered this, and they're trying to make sure they can get you no matter which way you die. The Lord's pondering our hearts. And what looks right in man's eyes, God knows your motive and your motivation. When this widow walked by and dropped in her two mites, it probably barely made a tink compared to the riches that were poured in by the wealthy. In fact, with the noise in there, you probably wouldn't have even noticed her gift. But heaven did. Heaven did. But heaven also noticed the hearts of the rich in this passage. And those hearts of the rich were dirty, filled with iniquity. Their hands were dirty from taking advantage of those they were supposed to be looking out for. God knows what you can give and why you only gave what you gave. Say, but I just can't give anymore. God knows that. God knows what you can give and what you cannot give. And one more thing, and I told you I would add this in. It's the thought that counts is the cover today used by too many for not giving more. Well, I thought about giving more, but I'm saving it for this. You're right, it is the thought that counts, and you better make sure you understand this. Matters not what the people think. God knows what your thought is in your giving. Isn't that what got Ananias in trouble with God? God knew what was in Ananias' heart. It was Ananias' money after he sold the property. Peter said, man, you could have done anything you wanted with it. But the fact is, you lied to God about what you... I'm bringing it all, and you didn't bring it all. You kept some for yourself. God said, I know your heart, Ananias. And his wife, too, by the way. The Lord ponders the heart. He knows why you did what you did. He knows why you said what you said. He knows why you behaved the way that you behaved. And in spite of the fact that in the eyes of others, you may be one of the elite, God recognizes what kind of a person you are. As opposed to, you may not ever be able to reach the voice quality, the giving of others. You may not be able to do the things they can do. You underestimate your ability to impact the lives of others. But all of that's on the side. What God is concerned is the heart with which you gave. You gave what you could. And God's pleased with that. Don't sell yourself short. Don't excuse yourself, but know this, even though you wish you could do more, if you gave all that you could, God is pleased. God knows our hearts. God ponders our hearts. Maybe it's time that we ponder God pondering our hearts. As you bow your head with me,